Education Gadfly Show. It's the Education Gadfly Show now. It's the Education Gadfly Show. It's the Education Gadfly Show now. Here we go, it's the Education Gadfly Show. Mike and Rick tell you everything you need to know about education and learning and teaching. Listen to the words that they be preaching, cause it's the Education Gadfly Show, yeah. It's the Education Gadfly Show.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man who is eyeing a certain position that might be opening at the World Bank, Rick Hess.
Hey, big guy.
How are you, Rick?
I'm doing good, man.
So have you listened to this new intro that we have for the podcast?
I have not.
You know, I honestly haven't listened to it yet either. I didn't realize we had a new intro. This is what happens when you delegate to Liam and Kobe. I was at the New Schools Venture Fund last week, and one of our listeners commented on it and expressed, you know, his displeasure with the rap. I guess he thought that it was us, that we were – it was actually us rapping.
Hold on. There was rap? I thought the rap of concern was your charter school lyrics rap.
I don't know. No. I think there's actually there's now a rap that our listeners just heard a moment ago off the podcast.
Maybe we should delete that rap so that we don't alienate our listenership.
Perhaps we should listen to it first and see what we think of it.
That defeats the whole purpose of delegation.
I guess we should listen to our own podcast, but it's kind of weird, you know, to do a show and then listen to yourself. I mean, after a while, it gets old, you know?
You know, and I think feedback's killing me. I wrote this piece on summer vacation for Time Magazine for Kids.
Mm-hmm.
Goes out to like 4 million 9 to 12-year-olds.
Right.
Well, now me and my staff like are sitting under a pile of mail from irate fourth graders who are furious that we want to think about taking back part of summer break.
Well, it sounds like there might have been a letter-writing campaign involved. And you should write them back.
Dude,
come on. They're going to think.
We're assiduously writing them back. We're thanking them for their insight.
Good.
Although they keep telling me I'm rude. Apparently, to want to rethink summer vacation is now in the vocabulary of the typical fourth grader. Rude.
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 Yeah, I think it is a little rude.
I feel you.
Well, listeners, if you want to tell us how we are rude, or perhaps if you don't like our rap, let us know at listeners@edexcellence.net. At the same time, if you do like the rap, we should find that out too.
But we should find out if it actually is a rap.
That's right. Liam, is it a rap? Yeah, it's a rap. Okay.
It's a serious rap, but I'll just correct you and say it's not listeners@edexcellence.net. It's letters, or else you're not going to get any of that feedback.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that it matters. Nobody ever writes us anyways.
Somebody write us this week, please.
Dude, believe me,
Mike's
don't ask
lonely.
For this. It's better not to be written. Trust me.
All right. We are going to start, as always, with a game of Pardon the Gadfly. Then we have an interview with my Fordham colleague, Eric Osberg. And finally, in-house weirdo Liam will impart some education news of the weird. So, Jen, get us started with Pardon the Gadfly.
All right. Topic one. Rick, the new NAEP results for history and civics are out. And the shocking news is that the scores are up. What are we to make of this news?
Dude, the results came out, what, like 7 hours ago? Is this what we're looking at?
Yes.
I have no idea what to make of them. They're not seven hours.
Rick. We're going to have to take your think tank credentials back.
Dude,
come on.
We're
talking
a
reporter
about...
is going to call you and say, tell me, Dr. Hess, what to make of this?
And I'm going to say they've been out like 7 hours. These are large macro national trends.
You're slacking.
I'm not a quick response machine.
Come on. Everybody expected, I expected the scores to go down, right? Because there's evidence to some degree that schools are narrowing the curriculum because of the pressures of No Child Left Behind, spending less time on subjects like history and civics. And yet somehow the scores went up. So how do you make sense of that?
Well, it could be that it's a poorly constructed test. It could be that it doesn't count. I mean, there's a bunch of explanations. We haven't sorted through any of this yet.
All right. Let me give you the answer.
Okay. Please.
The answer is, I think Secretary Spellings is half right.
Well, half right, what did she say?
When she said the part that she's right about, she said that, you know, it looks like kids are doing better in reading because of No Child Left Behind. Now, maybe that's questionable, but, you know, because of accountability, because schools are focusing more on reading, that kids are learning to read, and that is allowing them to read history and civics better. It might just be helping them read the test better, too.
Well, that's pretty aggressive hypothesis construction based on a couple of very flimsy data points.
Sure. That's fine.
Okay.
I don't
but anyway.
That's what we do in the think tank world.
But, so the
but the places where she's wrong.
That's what you do at Fordham. Yeah, we play the game a little differently, baby.
Yes. And this is why. Never mind.
But your second half, so.
The second half, though, is that she still claims that this proves that No Child Left Behind is not leading to a narrowing of the curriculum. I don't know that that's necessarily true. We do have some data that shows that at least schools are spending less time teaching some of these subjects. You know, could be that if there was accountability for subjects like history, that we'd be doing even better.
I mean, you know, I mean, what'll be interesting is when we start to look at this stuff state by state, when we can actually look at this with some degree of variability and precision, then I think there's probably.
Ooh, I think Jen really wants us to shut up. I do have to point out, though, that Rick, history and civics results don't come out state by state.
Ever?
Ever.
Why not?
Because there's not a budget in the NAEP program for that right now.
Hence, we're actually not going to get a whole lot of value out of this stuff at any point. Right? I mean, the value on Thank the you. Reading of the math stuff is once we actually get to play with it a little bit.
Okay.
That's
well,
a real problem.
Everybody, now you know it. Rick is falling down on his think tank duties.
Mm.
Daydreaming about things that might happen 10 years from now. Okay, go ahead, Jen.
All right. Mayors in L.A. and Detroit are pushing for charter schools, possibly under their own control, as the Indianapolis mayor has. Is this a better approach than mayoral takeover of entire school systems?
Rick?
Mike?
The answer is yes.
Why?
This is a better approach than mayoral takeover.
Because?
Well, a very smart think tanker I know wrote this long-winded report.
Thank you very much.
Rick
it must be me.
About mayoral control. Basically saying blah, 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 blah. There's really no evidence that mayoral control is effective.
Right.
Or ineffective.
Right.
We just don't know. This but is Mr. On Rick hand, on the one hand. On the other hand, Hess.
But on the other hand, Mike, the litany of evidence that Indianapolis-style charter schooling definitely works is
quite strong. They have some very strong charter schools supported by the mayor. There's some great accountability reports that come out every year showing the progress of these schools. It's quite impressive.
Well, this is like me saying I like what's happened in Boston since Menino got the schools. Therefore, I mean, that's hardly a conclusive argument. Look, I mean, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of what they're doing in Indianapolis. I think it's great. Do I think that other things equal, if you simply hand the stuff over, who's it? It's Kilpatrick. Is that the mayor mm-hmm. in Detroit?
Right.
You know, if he gets the schools, if they tried mayoral control a couple of years ago, remember, in Detroit, they right. had a whole bunch of concerns about it. If they decide to go mayoral chartering, is that going to work? It might. It lets you start fresh. It lets you kind of open up. I mean, there's a lot to be said for it. Is there any reason to think day in, day out, it's a better bet? No. It's a promising route. I think we ought to encourage this kind of thing. But how the hell can you say one's better than the other at this juncture?
It's better. Okay, Jen.
And they say Fordham shoots from the hip. What are they thinking of?
Better.
All right. A loophole in Michigan law is giving certain public school retirees full health benefits for life for working the equivalent of 102 hours after they turn 60, $150,000 per retiree benefit. Michigan is now spending over $1,000 per pupil per year on retirement expenses. Is the public educator retirement system going to blow up? What are the chances for reforming it? And first, I'm not even sure I understood what I just asked you, so maybe could you clarify for us?
Yeah, Mike, what's this thing about 102 hours after – that's more than $1,000 an hour?
All right, 60? All right. But yes, exactly. So what happens is this. In Michigan, you have to work for 30 years and retire after 60 in order to get your full health care benefits. So there's some people who left the system early who then were told by the retirement office, well, you know what? If you go back – after you're 60 and you work for at least a tenth of the school year, which is 103 hours as an aide, then you will qualify for your lifetime benefits, which is a huge, you know, benefit worth something like $150,000. And something like 30 people have taken advantage of this loophole. And yes, it works out to something like $1,500 per hour for those aides to work. But it's just a good example of this crazy retirement system we have, which has, you know, is basically going to, I think, bring down the entire system of public education finance.
I mean, it's why people are playing hot potato with Chrysler now, right? Daimler was like, get this thing off our hands because we can't afford the unfunded liabilities.
Exactly.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, one of the great misconceptions, too, is this notion that somehow everybody used to have what teachers have and that, you know, in fact, really never more than about half the American workforce ever had a defined benefit plan. And, you know, it's now down to something like a fifth of the workforce, except that it's the vast majority of folks who still work in civil service and public jobs. And so what's happening is we're paying a ton of tax dollars in a place like Michigan to offer relatively generous retirement benefits to people who aren't doing anything for our kids. And that's money that we could be using to compete for effective teachers who are actually going to make a difference today.
Now, Rick, don't you have a cousin who teaches?
I do. I've got several.
Are you trying to take away their retirement?
I'm a mean son of a gun. I'll tell you what. I'm trying to take away fourth grader summer vacation. I'm trying to take away these people's retirement security.
You must not be popular.
I'm not.
Well, you know, the only way this is going to change politically, I suspect, is if we grandfather these people in and we start with new teachers and give them a different deal, give them a 401k kind of deal instead.
Well, in fact, if you grandfather everybody currently in the system, it's probably, you know, it's brutally expensive. What you probably need to do is we've got to pick some kind of experience point at which it becomes feasible. And it's, you know, you're probably looking realistically at somewhere in the 30s.
Rick Hess trying to take away your retirement.
Write Mike Petrilli, tell him to stop it now.
That is it for Part of the Gadfly. Very spirited, if I say so myself. And now we turn to this week's interview. Let's take a listen. Today on the show, we have our colleague, Eric Osberg, who works with us here at the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation. Eric is a vice president, treasurer, and COO. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My agent's been trying for months to get me on, so I'm glad to be here.
Oh, well, good. Well, is that Liam? Who's your agent?
Yes, I'm firing him now.
Yeah. Okay, good. I saw you hanging out in the green room earlier, otherwise known as Liam's office.
Yes.
Did I leave out any of your positions?
No, that pretty much covers it.
Hey, Eric, I guess. How long have you been at Fordham now?
Almost 5 years.
Wow. So this is perhaps a world record?
It could be. It could be.
Yeah. Good, good. Well, we appreciate you finally coming on the show. We're going to talk today about an editorial that you have in the Education Gadfly. It's about school funding, fair funding, and you look at New York City and a big debate going on there, as well as at the federal level, some of the debates around No Child Left Behind. So let's start with New York City. What is it that Joel Klein is trying to do in terms of making funding fair in the Big Apple?
Mm-hmm. Well, he's trying to do a variety of things, all of which probably fall under the header of weighted student funding, which is something we've been very much in favor of. And so he's calling his proposal fair student funding. And the idea fundamentally is to smooth out some of the inequities in funding across all the schools all throughout the city. So I think it, you know, has a lot of moving parts, but the one we focused on, you know, this week in the editorial has to do with how they think about teacher salaries. And the challenge that New York has faced and every other district has faced is that when they talk about how they fund their schools, they actually tend to ignore teacher salaries. So they just sort of assume that every teacher makes the same in every school, which of course isn't true. In well-off schools, teachers tend to have more experience and make more money. So on its face, no one actually realizes that some of these schools are getting much more in the way of resources than other schools are. And so Klein has tried to attack that with limited success so far.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. So his original proposal, as I understand it, is that as new teachers came into the system, their actual teacher salaries would be budgeted for. And so that over time, over the course of a long period of time, school budgets would be based on actual dollars, and then principals could spend those dollars to hire teachers based on what they actually cost, instead of pretending that every teacher costs the same. But the UFT, the teachers union, fought back against that.
Right. So they crafted the sort of hold harmless agreement, whereby these schools that are currently better off because they have more expensive teachers won't actually face the pain of having the budget cuts that might go with trying to use actual teacher salaries. So, you know, on its face, it seems like a loss for reform, but we'll have to see how this actually plays out because we certainly know that there's going to be a lot more sunlight on this issue than there ever was before. The department's putting together this sort of interesting website where you can actually see how much each school is getting. And, you know, in my mind, that makes this sort of these inequities almost unsustainable. Yeah. I think at the end of the day, the public will sort of revolt over it, and that's a good thing.
Because advocates for poor families are going to be able to see, oh my goodness, the wealthier schools are getting so much more money. Now, what was interesting was last week in the conservative New York Sun, Andrew Wolf actually made the opposite point. I mean, tell us about that.
Right. Well, he was basically arguing that, well, wealthy parents, middle-class parents are never going to stand for having their schools' budgets cut. And, you know, it's a fair point. Those groups do have political power. But, you know, my belief is that, you know, over time, at the end of the day, even some of these parents probably aren't going to be able to sleep well at night to look their neighbors across the city in the eye if they're sort of stealing an unfair share of the city's budget in a way that policymakers haven't really intended.
Okay. Now let's talk about No Child Left Behind very briefly. Scholars like Paul Hill and Marguerite Rosa, now the No Child Left Behind Commission and now Education Trust, are all calling for a change in the way Title I funding works. Can you explain this in 20 seconds or less?
I will try. Well, again, it relates to teacher salaries. You know, the whole point of Title I was to provide schools with lots of poor students with additional funding. But they didn't want that to cause states or districts to shift money, their own money, away from those schools and just let the feds, you know, sort of make up that difference.
Right. So the federal money is supposed to be extra on top of what the,
exactly.
what the schools already get.
So feds needed a way to ensure that, that school funding was actually comparable in all those schools, which makes sense. But in doing so, they, from the beginning, have decided that we actually shouldn't count teacher salaries in that math. We should just use an average teacher salary across all the schools, which is a little bit silly because teacher salaries make up the bulk of school budgets.
Right. So we have this same problem again where we're ignoring the actual cost of teacher salaries.
Exactly.
And so these proposals would say that we should take these actual teacher salaries into account.
Right. We must do so. Exactly.
Right.
So it's a great step forward.
Okay, good. And I guess some people have said, well, the main concern there, though, is that, you know, then there might be pressure for districts to send some of the expensive teachers that are also lemon teachers, you know, these 25-year teachers who maybe aren't any good, and send them to the high-poverty schools to equalize funding.
It's a legitimate concern. And when the NCLB Commission brought this up, they basically said we should have some rules to prevent that. And I think that probably makes sense. You know, I also think that in the long term, if you actually think intelligently about how you manage schools and about how teacher salaries are set, these sorts of problems will sort of work themselves out. You won't be able to game the system in this way if you actually structure the system properly. So I'd rather kind of solve this problem that we know we have and then, you know, fix any other problems it might create than just sweep it under the rug for now.
Well, very good. Well, a complicated topic, but very well said, Eric.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for coming, and I hope you come back.
I will.
Eric Osberg of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation. So, Rick, what do you think about this comparability proposal that EdTrust and NCLB Commission have, this requirement that we, you know, account for actual teacher salaries?
I think it's actually one of my favorite things that they've put forward. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Is that right? I thought you called it last week something about the death camps or something.
Probably. But we're in think tanks. We change. Well, what was I complaining about?
You did. You used that phrase. You were saying that you were basically going to be forcing these teachers into schools that they didn't want to teach in, and Ed Trust was going to be.
Oh well,
you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, it depends. I mean, right. I mean, if it depends on which version of stuff you do. If you're doing the transparency, you know, versions, then you're fine. If you're doing these versions where you're going to straitjacket these guys, actually, I don't think I used the death camps, did I?
All right. Well, I thought so, but maybe I had that wrong.
Now I can't remember. No. Now I remember the conversations with the checker. We're talking about something different, I think.
Okay.
I don't know. Regardless, you know, I mean, Kate Walsh has made the really nice observation here that if you do this stuff stupidly, that what you wind up is encouraging districts to move really expensive teachers into schools to make the numbers work.
Right.
And that's a really good point. But there's a whole bunch of ways to kind of create the proper incentives. But getting transparency into these calculations as a first step is a really useful way to go.
Very good. Very good. Okie dokie. It is time for everyone's favorite education news of the weird.
What was I calling death camps, though, now? Now I can't recall. It's driving me crazy.
I don't know. I wish we could know because it was a very you know, strong hyperbolic analogy.
Hyperbole,
it's the kind of comment that would get you quoted in the newspaper. Mm. When you go to think tank camp, that's the kind of thing that they encourage.
How do you feel about mayors offering charter school systems, Mike, relative to mayoral control?
Better. You really like that line, huh? Now I think we might have overplayed it. Okay, Liam, what is weird this week?
What happens in Miss Buford's class stays in Miss Buford's class, only it doesn't. The spring break-inspired mantra was reportedly uttered by Ms. Buford, an 8th grade substitute teacher, before she showed her students an Academy Award-winning R-rated movie about gay cowboys and majestic vistas.
A classic American love story.
Parents were not informed that the movie in question, Brokeback Mountain, would be screened for their children. Student Jessica Turner was not amused by Ms. Buford's taste in films, and she promptly sued the Chicago Board of Education for $500,000 in damages, claiming psychological distress. Turner's grandfather and guardian, Kenneth Richardson, declined to comment on the specifics of the psychological distress Jessica underwent. Rick, if you were going to show eighth graders an inappropriate yet critically acclaimed movie, what would it be?
That's a good call. I think I'd have to go Scarface. Huh. It teaches about ambition, majesty, greed. It's really the entire human bathos in 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Mike? But along those lines, maybe I'd go with Godfather.
That would be – although it's Godfather R.
Sure.
Are you sure?
Come on. You know, there's all kinds of dead people and
the head William, what would you go with?
I hadn't really thought about it.
Liam wouldn't think to show an inappropriate movie.
I gotta say, Liam, that was. Remember, Liam had that dead week or two back in the fall or something. But
yeah. Man,
we've come back firm, man.
I do
it
like
is
that.
Once again my favorite part.
Well, I have mixed feelings though because I have to say I really thought Brokeback Mountain was a great movie, and you know,
did you?
I did.
It was a beautiful triumph of. Who was it? Ang Lee who directed that thing?
That's right, Ang Lee. Yeah.
It's better than The Incredible Hulk. He's also directed The Incredible Hulk, which sucked.
Yeah. And I think it was really a travesty that it did not win the Academy Award.
Incredible Hulk?
No, it broke back my
mind. Oh, okay.
But that's just my opinion. And who
have you
am
seen Spider-Man 3?
No. That's awful. I doubt will not.
No, better not.
I'd show Apocalypse Now.
That would be a good call.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
There you go. Those kids will be messed
Platoon
up.
Platoon would work too.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have. We could probably keep talking movies for a while, but that's not why you listen to the Education Gadfly Show.
Ooh, I'd show The Grindhouse, or Grindhouse. I guess there's no thought.
What about Shawshank?
Until next week, don't forget to read the original Education Gadfly at edexcellence.net.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli. I also did like the Shawshank Redemption. That's a good idea. Of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.